ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 85, entitled Lord Krishna Instructs Vasudev, Text 32. Chiran Mrita Sutadane Guruna Kila Choditau Anindyad अनिन्यत्हौ पित्रुः स्थानात् गुरवे गुरुदक्षिणाम्। चिरान्मृत सुतादाने गुरुणा किल चोदितौ अनिन्यथु पृथुत्थानात् गुरवे गुरुदक्षिणाम्। चिरान्मृत सुतादाने गुरुणा किल चोदितौ अनिन्यथौ पितृस्थानात् गुरवे गुरुदक्षिणाम्। चिरान्मृत सुतादाने गुरुणा किल चोदितौ अनिन्यथौ पितृस्थानात् गुरवे गुरुदक्षिणाम्। चिरान्मृता सुतादाने गुरुणा किल चोदितौ अनिन्यथो पितृस्थानात् गुरुवे गुरुदक्षिणाम्।
चिरात् फॉर अ लॉन्ग टाइम, मृत डेड, सुत the sun, adane, to return, guruna, by your spiritual master, kila, it has been heard, choditau, ordered, aninyathu, you brought him, pitri, of the forefathers, sthanat, from the place, guruve, to your spiritual master, Guru Dakshinam, as a token of thanksgiving for your Guru's mercy. Translation, disciples of Srila Prabhupada.
It is said that when your spiritual master ordered you to retrieve his long dead son, you brought him back from the forefathers' abode as a token of remuneration for your guru's mercy. Please fulfill my desire in the same way. O supreme masters of all yoga masters, please bring back my sons who were killed by the king of Bhoj, so that I may see them once again. The sage Shukdev said, thus entreated by their mother, O Bharat, Balaram and Krishna employed their mystic Yogamaya potency and entered the region of Sutal. When the king of the Daityas, Vali Maharaj, noticed the arrival of the two lords, his heart overflowed with joy, since he knew them to be the supreme soul and the worshipable deity of the entire universe, and especially of himself. He immediately stood up and then bowed down to offer respects along with his entire entourage. Bali took pleasure in offering them elevated seats. After they sat down, he washed the feet of the two supreme personalities. Then he took that water which purifies the whole world, even up to Lord Brahma, and poured it upon himself and his followers. Text 37. He worshipped them with all the riches at his disposal, priceless clothing, ornaments, fragrant sandalwood paste, betel nut, lamps, sumptuous food, and so on. Thus he offered them all his family's wealth and also his own self. Purport. Bali Maharaj's devotional attitude is renowned as the perfect example of complete self-surrender. When Lord Vishnu, in the guise of a young Brahmin student, approached him for charity, Bali offered all he possessed, and he had nothing more to offer, he surrendered himself as the Supreme Lord's eternal servant. There are 9 standard processes of devotional service, and the last, Atma Samarpanam, as taught by Bali Daityaraj, is the culmination toward which every endeavor should aim. If one tries to impress the Lord with wealth, power, intelligence, and so on, but fails to humbly understand oneself to be his servant, one's so-called devotion is only a presumptuous show. Om Akyana Timirandhasa Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanto Radha Kanto Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Pasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. we are blessed that Krishna's mother, who actually comes in the first chapter of the 10th canto, has come back again in the 85th chapter. After long, she is Krishna's mother, but she gets less chance to be in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam because Krishna just goes away so soon to Gokul, Mahavan. But now again, we are hearing the beautiful words and also understanding her feelings of her love, which are being expressed so nicely again in this 85th chapter, which is very close to the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because 90 chapters is the 10th canto ends. Krishna is glorified in all the three worlds as Devaki Nandanaya cha. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha. Right? And then, because he went to Gokul, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, then he was called as Govinda over there. But his primary initial identity is, he is Devaki Nandan. And that is so nice to understand the exalted nature of her love. What it takes to be the mother of God. It's a very, very heavy price she has paid in her life. How her love, her unconditional love for Krishna was tested so severely. What Mother Devaki must have gone through is difficult for any mortal to understand. Probably to some extent a mother can understand, but even then I believe it will be very difficult, because you even scarcely hear such things happening even in today's world. When your children are born on the very first, not first day, not even the first hour, in the first few minutes, they are smashed in front of the mother's eyes, the father's eyes, mercilessly by a person who has the power of 10,000 elephants in his arms. There cannot be possibly a more helpless state of existence in this world than to be in Devaki's state, where she just could not do anything for her children. Absolutely helpless before her own cousin brother, who was the king of the demons. And it was not enough, as if one, then even second time, and five times, six times, the same thing happened, right? But at last now Devaki is very happy. Because now she is with her son. Not her son, both her sons. So now she is very happy, and she has heard, just along with Vasudev, she also has heard the glories of her own sons from the great sages. And she is expressing now her motherly love. Her nature is a mother, so she speaks like a mother, she feels like a mother, she behaves like a mother. A great mother, Jagat Janani, universal mother. And therefore her heart naturally feels love for her deceased sons, right? Because she had hardly even seen them, she had hardly caressed them, she hardly kissed them, she hardly expressed her emotions, and then they were gone. They were gone, finished. So it is very natural for her to express what she is going to say now. That, my dear, now that I know even more so your glory, that you are the supreme of all supreme lords, you are the lord of all lords, you are the lord of all mystic powers. And then she has precedent. She said, you did something for your guru, which is a favor I also would like to have. Right? We know the story of how Sandipani Muni also lost his son in the ocean. And he was swallowed by Panchajana. And now Krishna had gone into the ocean and then got to Samayamini, Yamaraja's place. Krishna does all these things for various purposes. One thing, of course, was to get Sandipani Muni's son back from Samayamini, Yamaraja's Yamaloka. But also to give his darshan to Yamaraj. And even here, he is going to Sutala, Yes, to fulfill his mother's desire to get the 6 children back. But it appears very clearly here from these verses that it is also for a very additional special purpose, as that is to again give his darshan to his dear devotee Bali Maharaj, whom he had blessed several thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of years as Vamanadev way back in the Sat Yuga. And again, since he is the king of Sutala for the entire lifetime of a Manu, so he has gone there to even have him see him, so give his holy darshan. Right? So Krishna is fulfilling many purposes. In fact, Krishna has tried to do this maximum reach out, what we call the reach out, right? We reach out to the people, reach out to the masses, reach out to the elite, reach out to the students, reach out to everybody, right? So Krishna has a massive, is conscious that he has to reach out to as many people in his life as he has been here, you know. Even when he plays the role of Trinavarta in Trinavarta's arms, he is being squeezed by the powerful arms of Trinavarta. Then Trinavarta goes right up, way beyond what we now call as atmosphere. Then I think they call it stratosphere, ionosphere, like that, right? It gets thinner and thinner, and then maybe even beyond that, whatever spheres are there. But he went beyond that, the range of what we could call as normal atmospheric cover of the Earth planet. And then he went up there to give darshan to the demigods in Swargaloka, so they could also see him. So he went so high. So then he went to see when Muchukunda, he was in the cave right from the time, you know, previous times when he had fought the battle with, you know, years ago, millions of years ago. So Krishna went to the Muchukunda cave along with Kalayavan. So we can see Krishna is specifically, he is a person who wants to reciprocate love. That's it. So he's not going to be just satisfied in one place doing a particular leela and just, okay, I've done this and now Devaki is happy and fine, okay. But then he wants to do as many things as possible, like a devotee does, you know, right? He wants to do as many things for Krishna, right? He's not saying, oh, I have done, like Prabhupada, he never thought like that. Oh, I have done enough now, I mean, I've made ISKCON and so many people have become devotees. He went on doing, and he went, even in the last day of his life, last days, he went to London, right? When, imagine Prabhupada's state, what must have been, when you are in your 80s, and you have not been eating food for months together, what is the level of the energy in the such a body? And you're not traveling from here to Goregaon or Bhinder, you know, you're going across the ocean, you're going to a different continent. You know, you're going across to from India to London when you have got absolute devitalized body. But imagine the state of consciousness of a great souls, the pure Vaishnavas, that how they are never satisfied. The materialist is never satisfied. The devotees are never satisfied. Nobody is ever satisfied. The materialist is never satisfied doing things for himself, and a devotee is never satisfied doing things for Krishna. So dissatisfaction looms large in people's consciousness no matter what they do in this world. You're never satisfied. Krishna shares the same emotion. He is never satisfied. He just can't do enough for his devotees. What more can he do for his devotees? That is Krishna's chinta. Chintamani. He's in a dham called Chintamani. Chinta also stands for anxiety, right? Chintamani is a place where there is no chinta. It's called Chintamani dham. But there is a lot of chinta still for Krishna. He's always concerned. His anxiety is, what can I do for my devotees? This is a very special, this nature of Krishna is very special, extremely special, and it is very softening to the heart to understand and remember this very beautiful quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, tomorrow is Radhashtami also, so it's important and wonderful to understand Krishna's nature and the nature of bhakti, of which Radharani is the embodiment. She is Ladini Shakti personified. So we all know that the understanding, Gaudiya understanding, that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and Srimati Radharani is the supreme enjoyed. Now, when we generally say this word, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, right? We say that. Usually, if you were to say this very strongly and to people who don't understand, not in this forum, but people say, he's an enjoyer. So, you know, that really immediately puts it, you know, in a state of challenge, right? You get challenged. Hey, he's an enjoyer. I thought I was an enjoyer. So, and if you keep on saying, only he's the only enjoyer, then immediately the audience would feel, then what about me? Where am I in the equation? If he is the only enjoyer, then, I mean, do I stand to have anything, when even if I go into bhakti or whatever else and control my senses, what do I get out of this? So, inherently, that deep, deep envy doesn't allow us to accept this primeval truth of Krishna's enjoyer so easily. We may say it, we may speak it, we may hear it, a million times, we may read it, we may preach it, but imagine to actually understand this one line, Krishna is the only enjoyer. Now that's a huge challenge to the false ego. That you are left with nothing. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to them. What about me? Right? You say, all glories to everybody else, everybody, all glories to Prabhupada, all glories to Tulsi Maharani, all glories to Radha Gopinath, all glories to everybody else. Then, you know, hey, what about me? Right? So when we say Krishna is an enjoyer, what is it really, what does it really mean? When we say enjoyment, then we feel like, our understanding of enjoyment is very, very gross. You go to a hotel, it's a nice place, restaurant, and you have a lot of food around you, and you're just enjoying, you're eating all sorts of food, and then you go for a dance, and people around you are dancing, and you have a lot of nice decorations. It's like somebody's really enjoying. Now you can say, hey, this guy's really enjoying. Goes to some place where, you know, is in the, you know, skiing in the Alps, or he is going on a parachuting, parasailing everywhere, and you know, he's like really having a good time, moving at the best of cars in his tuxedo and like going around. You feel, this guy's really enjoying. See how he's enjoying, right? This is a gross, watered down, inferior, very mundane conception of enjoyment. Based on what we see as gross, sensual gratification. Let us not make the severe mistake of putting Krishna in that category. Because we are calling him not enjoyer, we are calling him supreme enjoyer. That means he must be like really out there doing far more than what any materialist can ever do. Right? Best of clothes and going around and doing all that is not at all what it means to be the enjoyer. Is nothing closer to the truth to put Krishna in that category that he is enjoying all by himself. Let us try to understand for a few minutes what is it to mean that Krishna is the enjoyer. And then we can probably appreciate what it means to have Srimati Radharani the supreme enjoyed. And then we can understand the third truth, where do we fit into this whole understanding. Srivas Angan is a place where the deepest revelations of bhakti have been made during the life of Mahaprabhu Chaitanya. It's a very, very sacred place. The Rasasthali of Sri Brajadham, which is Sri Bamsi Bhatta, right? And many other places at Govardhan where the Lord performed his leelas of Rasa, which is very confidential, where even Lord Shiva is not allowed. Imagine a place where Shiva is not allowed to be part of that leela. When he has to go and ask favors from the gopis and take his bath in the Kusum Sarovar and come back in a gopi dress. So it's a very confidential place where demigods are not allowed. No one is allowed. Same as Srivas Angan. Not anyone is allowed. Only some people are allowed. So it is corresponding to the qualification of who actually is allowed. Right? Why? Because what's being revealed there is very, very supremely confidential. So while we cannot understand confidentiality of what's happening in Rasa Leela, because that is way a PhD subject, way beyond any mortal to understand, including Lord Brahma cannot understand that, right? So what to talk of even when trying and going into that realm, it's impossible to reach out. But we can understand something of that realm by looking at a more accessible picture of what's happening at Srivas Angan. And there, the nature of God's enjoyment is revealed. And of course, God there is present as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But as we know, at Srivas Angan, Mahaprabhu was almost always, as he was always throughout his life, always mood of a das, always mood of a servant of the Lord. But for the Sapta Prahalya Leela, 721 hours, we see Mahaprabhu sort of upgrading himself from the mood of a das to the level of God. Not God, Supreme God. And he officially goes and sits on the place which belongs to him, the Vishnu's altar in the house of Srivas Thakur. So now we are beginning to understand that now this is God, and he's sitting on his Vyasasana, on his bona fide asana, and he is going to play the role of God, what he actually is. So now let's see further, what is going to be the enjoyment of God now? Right? What is he going to enjoy? If he's now going to sit in the God seat, as enjoyer seat, the CEO seat, or the main band seat, when he sits on the seat which belongs to him only, when he sits there officially, then what is his enjoyment? His enjoyment is to reveal. Enjoyment is to reveal how he has enjoyed thoroughly, how he has enjoyed unlimited pleasure in respecting love with his devotees. Is it not beautiful to see this? It's completely contrary picture to the material world's enjoyment. And though when he's enjoying, he's looking at people, right? He's sitting there very happy. He said, come on, offer me my Abhishek song. So they come and offer Abhishek song. And Purushukta prayers, and Srivas Thakur is supposed to be very expert, Narad Muni, very expert in chanting prayers. He does that. All that is going on, and then he reveals his enjoying potency. And partly he does what we talked about, eating food, right? So they bring a lot of food for him. They bring bananas and they bring sweets. All the sweets possible in the area they bring. And he just eats it up. After having done that, what is does thereafter is even more significant. So that reveals the nature of bhakti. So Gangadas, come here. Right? And his guru is academic guru comes in there, not spiritual master, but academic guru comes in. So do you remember many years ago when the Yavanas attacked you, and that immediately a flashback takes place in the mind of Gangadas Pandit, and he remembers the whole episode of how he was attacked that dark night by this very very powerful invaders who had attacked Navadvip. And he was running, because he was in danger, his children were in danger, and more so his wife was in danger, because she could have been maltreated by those Muslim raiders, right? And now he was completely helpless, and now he had shouted, desperately shouted for the Lord, please help, right? Of course, he didn't know the Lord was around, in his heart he was like that, but then he went to the shore of the swelling river. Ganga was swelling that time, and nobody was there. It was pitch dark. Again, like Devaki, Krishna does this. He often puts his devotees in situations where they are completely helpless. This is like when say Krishna's style. You know, everyone has a style. Rukmini, he puts her in a state where there is completely helpless. Draupadi, when she is completely, utterly helpless. Gajendra, when she is completely, utterly helpless. So helplessness, what does helplessness do to the soul? It cracks his false ego. Helplessness destroys our self-esteem as we being the protector of our own selves. Therefore Krishna, in order to intervene to our life, has to first put us in helpless situation. Because we are almost always helpless. It's a fact. We are helpless. Right? We cannot control anything in this world, including our blinking. We can't control our heart. We can't control our breathing. We are helpless. We completely depend on the help of material nature, of God. We can't see anything without the sun. We are helpless. But we go around this world with such a huge inflated false ego that Krishna has to first crack that. And Gangadas Pandit was in a situation where he was, nothing was there around him. And then he sees a boatman coming in. He said, "Boatman, boatman." He takes out from his pocket. He said, "Take this." And he takes out another from his pocket. "Take this also. Whatever coins he had, whatever he had taken from his house before he left." He said, "Take this. Take all this and more. I'll give you. Just take me across the swelling river." And the boatman was very much obliged by the money. It appeared, at least for that time. And he puts the family on the in the boat and he just cruises them across, right? And then Mahaprabhu reveals, "That boatman was me." That was me. And the moment he hears that, that his dear Lord had come to save him in person. He didn't send a boatman. He came as a boatman. That's a big difference there. As I said, he has chinta. He really worries about his devotees so much. Right? And the moment Gandhar Pandit hears that Krishna himself had come, he faints. He just loses control and loses consciousness. Right? So this is Krishna's enjoyment. And he calls Haridas Thakur. Right? Please don't forget what we are talking about. We are describing the Leela, definitely. But we are trying to understand something very deep behind it. We are trying to understand the nature of Krishna's enjoyment. What gives Krishna pleasure? It's not sensual gratification of a materialist or a mixed devotee. Right? When he calls Thakur Haridas, right? And he gets up. Now this Leela has taken place before Mahaprabhu came to this world. Thakur Haridas is several decades elder to Mahaprabhu Chaitanya. Almost about 30-40 years elder to Mahaprabhu Chaitanya. Right? Along with Adwaita Acharya, of course. They are almost similar ages. So way back before Mahaprabhu even came to this world, when the Yavanas were in full control of Bengal, they were ruled by the Nawabs. You know the story of how he was beaten up. Right? And then Mahaprabhu again puts Haridas Thakur in a flashback. So do you remember the Yavanas attacked you? And how can Haridas Thakur ever forget that? How he was beaten so ruthlessly, so mercilessly, tortured in 22 marketplaces? Unimaginable. What humiliation, what pain, what suffering, what tormenting, what unimaginable for any mortal to imagine what he must have gone through. Right? I said, and they were whipping you so much, I incarnated the Sudarshan Chakra to chop off the heads of those rascals. Right? But Thakur Haridas's heart was in a completely different state. He was not experiencing pain, not experiencing any humiliation, he was not experiencing any of these emotions whatsoever. He was only in a state of unalloyed compassion. And he was saying, "My dear Lord, please forgive them. Please forgive them." No one in this world can ever imitate this. And therefore he said, "My chakra did not act." Now, just like, you know, this is, like we talk, Krishna is, you know, the devotees get helpless. Here is helplessness of God. Now, God becomes helpless. So what subdues God? What makes God helpless? The love and compassion of his devotee. So, the devotee is getting overwhelmed by God's love, and God is getting overwhelmed by Krishna, by his devotee's love. So here Krishna, Mahaprabhu Chaitanya, is completely subdued by the overwhelming compassion of Thakur Haridas. So therefore, I incarnated in such a way that I covered your entire body with my own body. And I do the beatings on my back. If you are not convinced, look at this. And Mahaprabhu turns around and opens his shawl And those ruthless marks, the scars of those beatings are Mahaprabhu's body. Those scars are on Krishna's beautiful body. And Thakur Haridas was absolutely so pained to see this. The gopis are, you know, not happy to have even Krishna's, a small pebble go into Krishna's feet. Even that draws tears in their eyes. And so, Vrindavan is full of all these thorns and, you know, these small pebbles. They may be in an awkward position and, how would it hurt Krishna? Krishna's body is so very soft. There's, you know, this new tamal leaf. You know, tamal tree is down there. Tamakesha Goswami has planted tree, right? If you look at the tree, the other day I went there and was to see this leaf. And I touched that leaf to my chin and saw, how does it feel? So soft. That's how soft Krishna's feet are. There's a newly grown shoot of a tamal tree. And imagine that soft body of Krishna, which is like when he was born, Yashoda Mai was saying, hey, look at his body. His body is as soft as butter. So you lift Krishna, she was lifting a million times in a day, right? Just born. Now how soft is butter? I mean, all of us have not Amul butter. That is not butter at all, something else. But so when, you know, we are conditioned to think of butter means we think of Amul butter only, right? No, this is freshly made butter in the house, which is fluffy and soft. Your fingers just go into it, right? It go through and through. Your body can go through and through, right? It's so soft. So Krishna's body was as soft, and on that soft body, when Thakur Haridas saw whiplashes, scars, oh, how he must have felt. And he cried and cried and cried, why did you do this? Why did you do this for me? Why did you do this? But for Mahaprabhu, it was the greatest moment of joy. He enjoyed those whiplashes on his back. This is Krishna's enjoyment. It is not sadistic. It is not separatist enjoyment. Yuck. Even the whole world decided, I'm going to enjoy. That is materialist. Krishna's enjoyment is inclusive, not exclusive. Right? So he was enjoying those whiplashes on his back. Why? Because he knew that he was protecting his devotee. This is Krishna's enjoyment. Right? And as we see every leela unfold in this way at Mahaprakash, we understand the nature of bhakti, the nature of enjoyment of God. How, when he was telling Kulavacha Sridhar, you ask for anything, you can see his enjoyment is to give, right? He's a giver. A big data is there, donor, his enjoyment is to give. What do you want? Somebody goes, a big donor, we used to go to donor earlier for collecting for a hospital, he said, what do you want, doctor, what do you want? That we want X-ray machine, we don't have X-ray machine, we don't have this, we don't have that. We want a pathology, you know, this, we want this. And so give me your, you know, give an application and, you know, I will put it to my, this thing, and we'll have a committee next week and you come down next week. So donor is very proud of, you know, giving, okay, we'll give you 1 lakh rupees, sir. Don't worry, you take it. Right? So the more a donor is able to give, he feels, I'm giving something. He's very happy about it. Right? So Krishna says, okay, Sridhar, what do you want? You want kingdom? I'll give you. Make you Indra? I'll make you Indra also. Ashtasiddhi is very easy for me to. I'll give you Ashtasiddhi also. And then again helplessness comes. She's then saying, I don't want this. He keeps on saying, no for everything. Said, I don't want this. Ashtasiddhi is simply a headache. He rejects everything as insignificant. The most significant person is out giving. What is most significant for so many people? Vishwamitra Muni did so much for all, you know, for him it was very significant to become Devarshi and all that, you know, the whole story we know of Brahmarshi, Devarshi and the whole thing. What is that? You know, competing with Vasishtha Muni just to get the title. Like somebody, you know, just to get a title, you know, CEO or chairman, GM. To get the title, you do so many things. So he was in that mode. He just wanted the title. Brahmarshi. Right? Brahmarshi wanted the title. He was struggling for that so much. Thousands of years he was struggling for that. And those asasiddhis which Vishwamitra did not even get, Mahaprabhu is giving to him and he says, I just give it to him. And after that he says, this is just
completely just a headache, botheration. Then he becomes more desperate. He said, what do you want? I'll take you to Vaikuntha. He said, no, not Vaikuntha. How the pure devotee, again the nature of bhakti comes in here. How bhakti is so special. The process of sadhana bhakti, which we are all trying to perform, is actually to understand the glories of three things. See, bhakti is performed with the power of faith. Petrol for the car makes it move. Right? The petrol for bhakti is shraddha. So, shraddha will increase to the extent we truly understand the glory of Bhagavan, Bhakta and Bhakti. Our entire Bhagavat process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and reading the scriptures and reading all the Bhakti Shastras and doing our degrees of Bhakti Shastri and other things is all primarily to understand the glory of these three things, the glory of Bhagavan, the glory of Bhakti and the glory of the Bhakta. And the more we understand deeply within our heart, the activities will not change, the chanting will not change, the sadhana will not change, nothing will change externally. But it is done with so much more conviction. So much more conviction. This is really worthy of all my endeavor. Right? So here, the glory of bhakti comes in. What is the nature of bhakti of Sridhar? That when you have that bhakti, how everything in the entire creation becomes insignificant. Swamin Ketharthosmi Varamna Yache. How Dhruva Maharaj offered so much and it becomes insignificant. So if things in this world are significant to us still, that means we are still far away from that platform of genuine bhakti. If so many things are still significant for us, our name, our fame, our this and that, and all this, our money and our health, and this and that, all these things are very significant for us. Bhakti is still coming. Yet not around. But somebody has bhakti, and if he has no money, no house, no furniture, nothing, right? If he has bhakti, then if he's offered everything of this world, that means bhakti is so fulfilling to the heart. It occupies every nook and corner of your entire heart. There is no vacancy, there is no room, there is no vacuum. Anything of this world we put inside the heart still remains in a state of vacuum. Because material things can't go into a spiritual soul. Square peg in a round hole, it's just a complete misfit. So you put the whole material creation into your heart, which Hiranyakashipu actually managed to do that. He put the whole universe in his pocket. Just like Krishna put the whole universe in his mouth. In one sense, Hiranyakashipu did that. He put the whole universe in his pocket. Right? And after his pocket was full of the whole universe, his heart was still completely empty, full of anxiety. But a man who is complete opposite of Hiranyakashipu, who has nothing, he has Krishna, he has bhakti. So in Vaikuntha also appears to him something not very attractive. Imagine bhakti. How glorious is bhakti? Huh? That's what we're all hankering for. Once we get an atom. Many atoms make a molecule. Put an atom of bhakti. Then everything else around us, just as it says, pales into insignificance. Right? So this all is revealed in the story of Krishna being the enjoyer at Mahaprakash Leela. And then, what is his actual joy? Sridhar asked for that. He said, you come to me for 2 hours every day. And that becomes Mahaprabhu's joy. To come and argue on, but the Supreme Godhead, what is he doing? Bargaining about the price of kela? Now what fun is there in that? Is there enjoyment? It's a boring thing. Even the ladies go there and the bhaiya feels bored and the ladies feel bored because they said, give 25 rupees kilo. 22 mein de do, 20 mein de do. नहीं देन आर्ग्यू देन लेडी गोज अवे हाँ बहन जी आ जाओ 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 कितने लेके जाओ सो दे ऑल्सो दे आर्ग्यू एंड दिस एंड दैट यू नो इट्स डैम बोरिंग फॉर द भैया ऑल्सो ऑल दीज लेडीज आर ऑलवेज बार्गेनिंग भैया लेडी फील्स दिस गाइज आर ऑलवेज चीटिंग अस इज नो एंजॉयमेंट देयर फॉर बोथ ऑफ द बोथ द पार्टीज देयर यू नो आई जस्ट वांट टू गेट दैट डील डन एंड यू नो मूव ऑन विद लाइफ बट हियर कृष्णा इज happy just bargaining over the leave over, not about the price of gold the price of jewels or rubies or sapphire the price of the most cheapest of all fruits right kela it's not cherries or mangoes a little esoteric right a little costly and little kiwi or some you know whatever kela you know, on the roadside there are so many trees of kela all over the place You go now. You go to Navadip. They are all kela plantations. Just anywhere growing anywhere right now. Also, even after 500 years, they are growing anywhere, all over Navadip, all over Bengal. So, what is the joy of our bargaining over kela? But no, the kela is not the point. It is the love which has been exchanged between these two great souls, the Lord and his devotees. That is his enjoyment. So let's deeply understand this and appreciate the nature how Krishna who's Vibhu who's unlimitedly here Digavi has just said this is oh Rama Rama she has said this word you know previous words she said Rama Rama Aparameya Atman the immeasurable super soul immeasurable super soul means like the sun you know you cannot measure Krishna has got the luminance of millions of suns. One portion of that is a small sun which he has put as a, you know, halogen bulb in the sky. For all the whole world to get illuminated, one halogen bulb enough. Now we have so many lights to light up one room. One halogen bulb in the whole universe is getting enough light. That is Krishna's power, right? So, you know, she's saying immeasurable soul. So that immeasurable soul who is so vibhu, right, his joy is to become subordinate to the love of his anu. That is his joy. That is supreme joy, not joy, supreme joy. That anu, the one molecule of the sunlight, to become subservient to that is the enjoyer's actual enjoyment. It is so wonderful. So wonderful that the enjoyment of the bhakta and bhakti, bhakta and the and Bhagwan, is mutually becoming subordinate to each other. That's all. The devotee is trying to become more and more subservient to the Lord's will. Okay, you go and get chandan from Malaya Hills. You know, oh, the old man. He said, "My dear Lord, old man, koi sa." Such a difficult thing. Madan Puri happily goes. He's subservient to the Lord's desire. He goes. He gets chandan. Anything the Lord expresses, the Lord is very happy. So how each one is trying to become more subservient to each other, that is the actual joy of the devotee and the Lord. It is not a selfish enjoyment. Not selfish enjoyment at all. So, what is the prerequisite for understanding this essential truth? The requisite is genuine humility of the heart. Krishna can be only understood with one quality, humility. We can see that before he gives his grace, when he destroys demons, there's another Krishna style, Krishna's modus operandi, Krishna's way of doing things. When he wants to give his grace to a stubborn fellow, first he will smash him. Smash him so bad that he actually becomes humble. Right? Because without humility, Krishna's grace can't enter. It's like Mura demon. The Mura demon is having a whole, you know, stuff around his kingdom. Barbed wires, electrical fencing, moat around, this and that, mystic gases around, all sorts of things around. He's inside. Now, false ego is like that. The false ego has created a huge moat, barbed wires, everything. Krishna's grace can't enter only. You chant Hare Krishna so much, and it's not entering, nothing is happening. But nothing is happening because you are not really having sincere humility. So Krishna is the first smash the false ego. So Kaliya, full of false ego, full of massive false ego, deep-seated envy, Krishna has to smash him, smash him, smash him, smash every head, and pulverize those heads and crack and fracture those skulls, right? Take out all the poison, completely humbled, completely humiliated, and then he said, my dear Lord, you're the supreme creator. You're the cause of all causes. Smash, because till Krishna does that to him, he won't be able to accept Krishna's grace. So it is not something that Krishna is doing out of sadistic pleasure. He doesn't enjoy beating up somebody like that, beating up Kaliya and said, here you are, you know, you deserve this. No, he does it as a play, as a dance, as a joke. But in that sense, he's really doing something else. He's really allowing that soul to really give up and crack your false ego. And then his heart opens to understand the prayers of the Nagapatnis. And then he said, my dear Lord, yeah, what they say is true. I also feel the same way. So that's the way Krishna really works. He only gives his grace when the false ego is cracked. So rather than trying for bhakti, in fact, bhakti, you can never try for bhakti. Because no matter what you try for bhakti, you will not get it. You won't just get bhakti. Because bhakti is never always given. It's always given. It is never done, got by efforts. There's something which you will never get through effort. You can do efforts of millions of lifetimes. You won't never get bhakti. Because the giver has to just feel that he has to give it to you. What we need to endeavor for is not bhakti, but we have to endeavor for genuine humility. That's the actual goal of what we are trying to do right now. And humility is expressed through selfless service attitude. That's a beautiful line. Thakur Bhaktivinoda sings. Bhakata seva parama siddhi prem lati karamula. Such a profound revelation. Profound revelation. The very root of bhakti. If this bhakti lata, if there's a seed and there is a root, how these roots are grasping the soil of your consciousness. What do roots do? They grasp. It's like claws of the and animals and claws of the birds. So through the roots, the whole tree grasps on the soil, so it never falls. Right? So how strongly is our consciousness rooted in Krishna consciousness? What is that root? How the root gets its strength? What is it, a strong root or a weak root? We're not going to bother about the external, you know, foliage. It's a big tree, a lot of foliage, a lot of the, you know, this and that, you know, big very nice tree. Those are external achievements of the devotee. He's preaching so much, he's made so many disciples, and he is, you know, does such a great manager and such a great singer, and all these are external acts of devotion which the world sees. Ooh, what a great tree, wonderful Vaishnav, Hare Krishna. Right? But the Lord is not looking at that. The Lord is looking at the soil. Soil is the heart. So the root, what sustains this huge tree against all the winds that will blow, all the tornadoes that will come, the hurricane that will come, is prema latikara mula, bhakata seva. Right? That person who has made his life and soul service to Vaishnavas is the only candidate eligible to gain strength of Krishna consciousness, to sustain against the power of Maya, to grasp such a strong way that nothing of the external world will affect him. Well, pride, when pride, the winds of pride blow, when the winds of arrogance blow, when the winds of envy blow into his consciousness, and all this is blowing, it won't blow off his consciousness because he's taking constant nourishment from powerful roots, which is service to the Vaishnavas. And that's the only thing which really attracts Krishna. It is the very root. It is not the fertilizer to the root. It is the root. It is not the bhakta seva adds more strength to the root. It is the root. It is not nourishment to the root. It's a difference. That there is something else to do and therefore the root becomes strong. No, it is the root in itself. And it is a fertilizer as well. So when you fertilize your consciousness with this and the roots become strong, they become deep, right? Then that humility which is expressed through service attitude is what attracts Krishna's attention. And we end the class by again remembering Mahaprakash Leela, where this was depicted in the episode of this wonderful Vaishnavi Dukhi. Right? How bhakti is so cuts through all barriers. I mean, Mr. Modi comes in or some big CEO, you know, not anyone is allowed in that particular hall when he's having a banquet. It's only the very select people will be there. With all securities, this and that, you have a pass, VIP pass, VVIP pass, VVVVIP pass, whatever. Only some, you know, only you are allowed. You're not allowed. You are minister, TK, but only this fellow is allowed, right? When a big man goes around, you know, you only very few people are out. Now the CEO of all CEOs, the CEO of this world is Brahma, and the Lord of Brahma is sitting there as an enjoyer. And who's allowed there? Who's allowed? Dukhi is allowed. Beggars allowed, beggars. Shuklamar Brahmachari is allowed. Right? So how bhakti, how Mahaprabhu's mercy, it cuts through all barriers. It cuts through all barriers. Beggars, Kelavala is allowed, beggar is allowed. You know, all these people are allowed. No problem. Scholars are allowed. Singers are allowed. Anybody is allowed. Only qualification is Bhakata Seva. All of them are, the only life and soul is serving the Vaishnavas. All of them are Anya, Bilashita, Shunyam. Then we are allowed. That's only qualification. So then we see that how, what attracts Krishna's attention? The enjoyer wants to get attracted to whom? What we have to catch it, we have to catch it. Basically, bhakti means to catch Krishna's attention. Do something in this world so you attract Krishna's attention, right? So what is going to attract Krishna? As you know, in the crowd of how many people are there in this creation, right? You know, in a crowd, if having a whole crowd of say a million people, what will you do in the crowd to attract the speaker? You'll do something, you will do, right? But there are billions of people sitting there, billions upon billions upon billions. How will you attract the main man's attention? You're a nobody. Actually, you're a nobody. But he has eyes on everybody. Don't worry, you don't try to attract his attention. You go and just try to serve. You just try to serve those people who are dear to him, that's all. Very simple, very profound. You just find out who's dear to this man called Krishna, this personal Krishna. Who's dear to him? Who's dedicated to him? Who's serving him? Who loves him? Who's dedicated to his loyal service? You go and serve them. That's all. And Krishna says, you. I don't like this name of Dukhi. You are Sukhi. So we can be eternally Sukhi in this way. We are Dukhi. Right? All of us are Dukhis in this world. Right? But if you want to become Sukhi, then Dukhi is our Acharya. Serve the Vaishnavas. However difficult it may appear, however challenging it may be, but without offense, without pretense, serve them. And Krishna is going to see that. It's will end over here, it's getting late. Hare Krishna. So we won't take any questions, but thank you for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Hari Bol.